Hi everybody, my name is Mr. Barlow and welcome to episode 23 of the VCE Biology Podcast. This episode covers part of Unit 2, Area of Study 2, and I'll be talking about the way that ecosystems change over time. So ecosystems actually change all the time. For example, if we go down to the intertidal zone on the foreshore, we'll see that at high tide, some organisms are submerged in water, and at low tide, those same organisms are not submerged in water, so that's quite a big change. Sometimes it's warm, so during the day it's warm, and at night it gets quite a bit colder, so temperature changes quite a bit. Sometimes it's raining and it's wet, sometimes it's not raining and it's dry. Sometimes in an ecosystem it might experience a flood, and sometimes that same ecosystem may experience a drought. And many of the changes that ecosystems experience are actually also cyclic. For example, every day there's a period of light and there's a period of darkness, and then again, you know, light, dark. Or for example, ecosystems experience the seasons, you know, summer, autumn, winter, spring. It gets warm throughout during the year, and then it gets cold, and then it gets warm, and then it gets cold every year. So there's all of these, you know, regular cycles. And all of these changes actually affect the organisms that live in those ecosystems. For example, when we talk about seasons, we can talk about birds migrating. So birds might, well, some birds might live in one area of the world during the winter feeding months, and then they might migrate vast distances to a completely different area of the world during the summer. So we can see that, you know, ecosystems do change all the time, and those changes do affect the organisms that live in them. Now, if we observe an ecosystem over a long period of time, we'll also see that ecosystem slowly change. And this slow, gradual change of an actual ecosystem is called ecological succession. So succession refers to more or less predictable and orderly changes in the composition or structure of an ecosystem, in which one biological community is gradually replaced by another as the environment changes. So as an example of succession, we can think about a newly formed lake. So a brand new lake may not have very many living things in it, but over time the number of plants around the edge of the lake and the number of plants in the lake will increase, and then the number of microorganisms will increase as plant matter falls into the lake and gives them something to feed on. So this process by which, you know, the lake acquires a higher concentration of organic nutrients is actually called eutrophication. So eutrophication means that, you know, it starts with the plants and then bacteria, but then other organisms will come in, like, you know, little swimming fish will start to live there, and a higher and higher concentration of nutrients will result in the lake. You know, the fish will die and fall to the bottom, and sediments will provide nutrition to the organisms in the lake. But in fact, if eutrophication continues, the lake will become, you know, supersaturated, I suppose, with nutrients. And as, you know, it'll promote the growth of things like algae, but as algae die and decompose, higher levels of organic matter and decomposing organisms will actually deplete the amount of oxygen available in the lake, and that'll cause the death of, you know, organisms in the lake like fish. So if eutrophication continues, it'll actually be quite bad for the lake. So eutrophication, you know, a body of water changing from one that's low in nutrients to one that's high in nutrients, is obviously an example of ecological succession. But we can in fact take that example of the lake a bit further. So if we keep going with that, sediment in the lake may end up building up so that the lake ends up becoming land again. And then that land, seeds will blow into that land, and new grasses and small shrubs will grow on that land. And then seeds from bigger trees will blow in, and bigger trees will grow on that land. And what was once, you know, a lake may end up becoming a forest. So that would also be, you know, a great example of succession. Now, there are actually two types of succession. There's primary succession and secondary succession. So primary succession occurs when a bare, totally bare area is colonized by organisms for the first time. So this might happen after there's been a lava flow or a really severe landslide. And it'll start with organisms like small grasses, and then small animals will come in and colonize that area, for the first time. And secondary succession occurs in areas where the original vegetation has been disturbed. For example, if a forest is cleared, and then left to its own devices for a long period of time, small grasses and shrubs will again be the first things to grow, and then small trees will grow, and eventually it'll become a forest again after a long period of time. So yeah, you can have primary succession or secondary succession. So if an ecosystem undergoes a long period of ecological succession, it may turn into what's called a climax community. So this is basically where the composition is relatively stable and natural change is actually quite unlikely as long as natural environmental conditions do stay the same. So it's in fact fairly rare for a climax community to be reached because fires and floods and big storms are actually common occurrences in nature, and these greatly disturb biological communities and they open up the habitat so that the process of succession can actually start again. But a great example of a climax community is an enormous tropical rainforest. Now, when you talk about changing ecosystems, you have to talk about the effect that humans have had on ecosystems. So, in fact, humans have always changed the ecosystem where they live. So, back when Aboriginals, when they used to do controlled burning of the forests or fire stick farming, but that kind of thing actually pales into insignificance when you think about the huge amount of land clearing and, the creation of concrete jungles that humans are doing right now. So humans actually changing from being hunter-gatherers to mastering farming and agriculture has had a huge effect on the human population. So there's now 7 billion of us on the planet. And that in turn is having a massive impact on the biosphere. So now overuse and misuse of the land is resulting in land degradation, and that includes soil erosion and increased salinity. Humans are affecting living organisms by hunting them. We're introducing non-native species into ecosystems, and we're planting monocultures. That means, just planting wheat in fields as opposed to the great biodiversity which exists in regular bushland or forests. I mean, really, we're not, or humans are really not having a very positive impact on the world, are we? Humans are also responsible for introducing a great deal of pollution into the environment. That causes instability and disorder and harm to the ecosystem, the organisms that live there. Humans are responsible for water pollution by introducing contaminants such as sewage or other organic wastes such as microorganisms and also chemicals into our waterways. We're also responsible for air pollution. We introduce a great deal of smoke and smog into the atmosphere. A great example of the negative impact of our one type of air pollution is the way that we released chlorofluorocarbons or CFCs into the atmosphere. So CFCs actually break down ozone in the upper layers of the atmosphere, and that's actually resulted in a hole in the ozone layer. That's let an increasing amount of UV light or UV rays in, which is bad for humans, but also many other organisms, and increases the chances of things like skin cancer. Humans are also responsible for releasing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, like carbon dioxide and methane. And this is resulting in global warming, climate change, and that's changing ecosystems all over the world, and it's really not having a very positive impact at all. But there's so many different species on Earth. Why should we bother saving them? Well, there's a whole bunch of reasons, really. I mean, living things have an aesthetic value. I mean, they're nice. Natural landscapes are nice to look at, and animals are nice to see and interact with. There's an absolutely huge ecological value. I mean, humans rely on ecosystems to survive. We need plants for oxygen. We need plants and animals for food. We're at the top of the food chain. If the organisms below us in the food chain die, then we're going to die too. There's also a practical value to, you know, biodiversity and ecosystems. Heaps of medicines that we use all the time contain plant compounds. So if we destroy all the plants all over the world, then we may not be able to create new medicines. We may never cure cancer or cure HIV. We've also got to save habitats. And the reason we have to do that is that it's important to have habitats so that we can protect the diversity of organisms and the diversity of living things on the planet. So having protected or a diverse range of protected habitats enables us to protect a diverse range of species. And that's really, really important. You know, having different habitats helps to save species. Humans must start to practice a more sustainable use of the Earth's resources. There's only one Earth. It's all we've got. It's our home. If we don't take care of it, it'll die and we'll die with it. And that brings episode 23 and unit 2 of the VCE Biology Podcast to a close. I hope you've enjoyed learning biology with me. My name's Mr. Barlow, and thanks for listening.